Hey, Ethan, thanks very much, Edward, and thanks for letting me come for the week. So what I want to talk about is so everything I'm going to talk about is joint work with Si Lee, who's just graduated from Harvard. And I think this talk will be too slow for many people, so a lot of it will be about, you know, generalities of mirror symmetry and so on. And so the main aim is to explain. So C and I we're trying to construct the quantum BCLB theory. So we have some generalized version which includes descendants. This is a hard problem because it's a non-normalizable theory, six dimensions. So we've solved it in dimension one, which is not that exciting. But what's cool is that in dimension one it really works. I mean that the partition function of the BCLB theory on elliptic curve is precisely the Gromov-Witten theory of the mirror elliptic curve. It's actually quite tricky to prove this, because the Gromov-Witten theory of the elliptic curve is, you know, it's a kind of complicated thing. Yes, exactly, yeah. So there's a similar result of Digraph about 15 years ago without descendants. Okay, so let's start by reminding everybody what they know very, very well. I mean, of course, back in the day, before Kuntsevich, mirror symmetry says rational curves, counting rational curves on one side, are about, you know, related to variations of Hodge structure on the other side. Of course, I also find this very strange because these are completely different things, right? Rational curves, sequence of numbers, variations of Hodge structure, some kind of algebraic object. So, the nice way to encode both sides as the same kind of object is to say that both sides are a symmetric vector space and a conic Lagrangian submanifold. And then the statement is that this data matches up both sides. Okay, so there. Now the story has two versions, one with gravitational.
Sure,
sorry.
So what is encoded by what?
Okay, they're both conic Lagrangian submanifold. So I'll explain what each is for the A and the B model in a second. So there are two versions, you know, with descendants and without descendants. So I'll say a little bit about the one without descendants first, it's a bit easier. So for the B model, the symplectic vector space is just H3 of your Calabi-Yau. And the formal, you know, we look at the formal moduli space of Calabi-Yau as near a given one. And that embeds inside of H3. Namely, I take a Calabi-Yau Y near X. By Calabi-Yau, I mean equipped with volume form. And I just look at the cohomology class of that volume form. And this is clearly a conic Lagrangian submanifold. So the point being is that if you the genus zero prepotential for the B model is just the generating function of this conic Lagrangian in a certain polarization. So that is the A model. So there. I don't know if you know, there's all this really beautiful work of Giddenthal about more than 10 years ago, where he said that the A model, you know, many things of the A model are encoded very nicely in terms of symplectic geometry. So here what you do is a symplectic vector space, so it's the direction of PP cohomologies, which is mirror to H3. We twist the pairs that's symplectic. And then if I take the genus zero going with invariants, we think of this as a, you know, with only insertions from 1-1 classes and 0-0 classes, this implies a generating function. So I can simply take the graph of this generating function inside the symplectic vector space to be my A model Lagrangian code. Okay, so, and then mirror symmetry says that these two guys match up.
Let's see. Okay, so maybe. So the dimension is that there seems to be some asymmetry in this story. In the A model, our synthetic vector space is polarized, right? So one Lagrangian is H00, the long bitter side is H22 and H33. But in the B model, the polarization is a lot more subtle. So, actually, the other point is, of course, you need to introduce some parameter Q, and as everybody knows, that's the modulus of the Clavier. Okay. So the way you're supposed to do to match up this polarization on the A model is one half of the polarization, this part, corresponds to F2 of the Hodge filtration. And the naive guess is that the other half should just be the complex conjugate. That's not correct. For one thing, it doesn't vary holomorphically. This is the famous holomorphic anomaly equation.
But the correct thing to do is you look at the monodromy around infinity, and this gives you complementary polarization, and then everything should match up. So everything so far should be pretty familiar. So the next thing I want to introduce is sentence. So, as somebody knows, we're going to find the Gronlund-Brook invariance with descendants by integrating side classes from the moduli space of stable maps. And we can just define in the usual way a generating function of these descending Gronlund-Brook invariants.
I think these slides were written for a more general audience and here.
So what we're going to do is take this generating function and use it to define an infinite-dimensional Gronlund-Brook problem. A genus 0 version of the generating function. So this is going to be a Lagrangian cone in some infinite-dimensional symmetric vector space introduced by given Paul. And this symmetric vector space is a kind of key part of the construction, part of it.
So you just take cohomology of X, adjoin power series into Lagrangian series in T. And the pairing is this funny residue of Ft, g of minus t of it. And once you introduce this, it becomes a symplectic vector space, which we can identify with the cotangent bundles of the polyfunct to the power of the series function.
And then we simply define the A model Gronlundian cone to be the graph of the genus zero generating function of Gronlund-Brook invariants. So any questions so far?
I think maybe you and Kendall.
Where did Q go?
Everything's over that base ring, over the cover ring.
Oh, okay, so it's over form process in Q.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that.
And now this DF is a higher genus already.
No, this is the genus zero. Genus zero, yeah.
But it doesn't depend on T, does it?
Yes, this is a genus zero line with descendants, so the parallel T to the K.
Oh, it's with descendants, okay.
Corresponds to the sine to the K.
Actually, there's some really pretty story about this, that the axioms of Frobenius planning, but like the axioms of genus zero Gronlund-Brook invariants, translate very nicely into, say, the properties of this cone, that it's a cone.
Yeah, one of the string equation tells you that this is a cone. Something else tells you that where its base vertex is. So it's.
But how about
Clavier
free fall in the cone?
Yes, yeah, exactly. They're not quite zero, but they're determined in some simple way that everything else. Yeah, for dimensional reasons, right? But the moduli space is of dimension zero, so.
And this is more general story.
More general, yeah.
Are you talking about the general story or still? Three Columbia three folds was just a motivating example, or
so that's a motivating example. I'm talking about the general story. Yeah, and as I said,
but X is always Columbia.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk about the B model version of this combined vector space. So,
well, I'm confused. Which one is
it? Oh, sorry. So this, well, on this page, X is the B model, so I'm probably switching X and X2. Okay. So we saw that for the small cone, we should find the tag.
With the small version of the cone, I took, you know, H3. If it was a Clavier threefold, I looked at the Lagrangian inside it, given by the moduli space of nearby Claviers.
So for the infinite-dimensional version, we don't need to assume X is a dimension 3, it can be any dimension. But what we do is we take, we're going to construct a symmetric vector space in the space of polyvector fields. Define like that. And so polyvector fields we can identify with the Riemann complex, or at least beyond the forms, with some shift. So the reason to think of polyvector fields is that the product of polyvector fields is different from the quantum forms. So, now the forms of this D and D bar operators, we can translate those into corresponding operators in polyvector fields, and I use the same symbols. And that 3 should be D, but there's a great commutative product and a trace given by integration using against the volume form. Okay, so the category theory and so on, we recognize that this polyvector field is the Hodgson cohomology of the category of sheaves of X. Okay, so the big symplectic vector space of the B model, we're going to get it from polyvector fields that join parameter T, which corresponds to descendants, with a differential, if you write like this, B bar plus T delta, and a certain pairing. So the pairing is defined in the same way given Talbot, the residue of F T, G minus T, dt. So what should we think to say? So one way to understand what's going on here is that from the Rorty point of view, like polyvector fields, that's a space we assign to a circle. There's this Hodgson cohomology. And introducing it in this parameter T, that's just a version of the kind of the space we assign to a circle is a circle action. We're doing some kind of S1 equivariant version of that cosine complex inside the circle. Okay, so now, what's our Lagrangian cone? It has, I like this expression. We just take the set of things of the form e to the f over t, where f has no negative powers of t in it. And this defines a Lagrangian cone. Okay? And this is supposed to be mirrored to Gomes' Whitman invariants. And there's a similar story to what we talked about before. We can identify this big Lagrangian cone with some kind of moduli space of extended deformations of the Clavier. For instance, it's clear that if I want to introduce a superpotential to my Clavier, that will give me a point in the Lagrangian cone. So those directions, those points in the Lagrangian cone, but deformations of the Clavier are included as well. So this will be an extended moduli space. Okay. Any questions or? It's clearly a cone. You can check it's preserved by the differential. So this defines, according to Gibbenthal's show that Lagrangian cones in symplectic vector spaces of this nature, which have an action of t implication by t, satisfying a certain axiom, they're the same as Frobenius manifolds. So it's, you can just check Gibbenthal's axioms a little bit easily, and this defines a Frobenius manifold, essentially, up to choice of polarization.
Right, you could
presumably define, I think in Veronica, you could define something like this cone in a way that sounded more like before, using kind of variation of hot structures. Is it easy to see that it's the same as this DE to that? Or...
Yeah, the point is that, so what's the Gauss mean connection, if I move in some direction given by a polyvector field alpha, the Gauss mean connection is given by multiplying wedging with alpha over t. Right, so what are we doing? We take the cone given by all the positive stuff, and then look at what the Gauss mean connection does to that. Yeah, so it's the same exactly what Brown said. And like in many cases, Brown really proves that this matches up with the flow descending genus zero Goldfrieden variance. Problem with flight docs, of course.
What is a quadratic morphism of some types of electric places?
Yeah, exactly. So it's supposed to be. I mean, there's something a little subtle here, right? You should take the cone model of this guy to match it with the A model, but then you have to transfer the Lagrangian cone from the original guy onto its cohomology. And the way to do this is some kind of homological transformation. Homological transfer. Okay. So, what we're interested in is quantizing this picture. Okay. So we see that this brand of given topology D, the A and the B model, both give us a Lagrangian submanifold in this vector space. So everybody should see immediately what we should do. We try and quantize. We should replace the symplectic vector space. We should deformation quantize the symplectic vector space by taking the Weyl algebra the usual way. And then the Lagrangian submanifold quantized to a vector in the associated box space, the Weyl algebra. So you can see how does this work in the A model. So this is very easy, and this is again something given problem introduced. So we solve in the A model our syntactic vector space is polarized. So we can identify the Fock space with just functions on one half of it. All these functions. So therefore I can take the generating function, Lagrangian variance, q is q of descendants, kind of over the space ring where we join q. And I do the usual thing. I sum over these g with different g, introduce h to the parameter h bar, which is how quantum we are, information quantization parameter. And this defines, now it's just again a function of this. This interdimensional space, we interpret as being a state in the Fock space. So given how all these beautiful results saying that, you know, what they call bugly of transformations on the Fock space translate into various natural properties of Goldberg invariants.
We actually expect to get a vector in the Fock space or something formal in
H bar? It's something formal in H bar, yeah. We don't.
So it's a form of our series in Q and also in H bar.
Yes.
These are two independent variables. Yeah. What does it mean that the vector becomes LA in the A?
Well, it's
in just
it's a vector. Well, in what sense?
It oh, so it's okay. So we have this Weyl algebra and a module over it and a map. So once I take the H bar limit goes 0, the Weyl algebra becomes commutative. And the module of the ideal, this vector which I think was as a left ideal in the Weyl algebra. And when h-bar goes to 0, it becomes the ideal.
It's generated by this.
Yeah, well, the Fock module, so there's a map from the Weyl algebra to the Fock module given by z. But it's an element of the Fock space, so I can think of it as a map from the Weyl algebra to the Fock module.
And you mean because you apply it to this vector?
Yeah, I mean.
Okay.
And then I can take the kernel, which is a left ideal in the Weyl algebra.
Uh-huh.
and then as H bar goes to zero, that left ideal becomes the two-sided ideal that we see.
Say real algebra, you really mean Y algebra, right?
Oh, yeah.
You don't know it was used in a better presentation.
Okay. Yeah. Yes, you're right. Yeah, yeah.
Well, yes.
Heisenberg, yes. Yeah, so as H book goes to zero, this becomes an ideal and just function.
So it's just the annihilator of this vector, that's what you're
doing. Exactly, yeah.
Okay, then you take the spectrum and all the symbols of those things.
Exactly. It's a Golongi matrix.
Vector becomes a layer, it's too shorthand.
Okay. So remember, if we have the caveat threefold X, then in the B model, we saw that, the Lagrangian was this formal moduli space of Clavier's near X. So when we plot that, we should find a state in the Fock space for H3. And then similarly, if we introduce descendants, we should find a state in the Fock space for this big interdimensional guy involving polyvector fields. So this is the kind of problem we're going to try to solve, is to quantize this Lagrangian submanifold. And we're going to see that we can attack this problem, we can interpret the problem of quantizing this guy as a problem of constructing quantum field theory in X, as we'll see. So let's move on to discuss BCOP theory. So I'll first discuss the BCOB theory as originally discussed in the paper, BCOB.
One would think that this should be a better approach to this problem, because you want to solve something in quantum mechanics, and you want to use a non-analyzable C-dimensional or that Z-dimensional quantum field theory to do that.
I do have another approach using the category of sheaves on X. But you do get a state in the Fock space. The problem is it's impossible to compute anything. And of course it wants to be a higher dimensional field theory. Right? You wrote a paper on this some stage. It's just that one's too easy. There's too many ways to do it. You want to find the right one. Right, and that's the what's in the right condition. You want it to be kind of local on X. There's a very strong constraint. Okay, so let's try and interpret this problem as a problem. So what do these guys do? Yeah, they say they construct this field theory where the fields indeed the deformations of complex structure, and the gauge group is the diffeomorphism group, and the solution to the equation of motion, modulo gauge, perturbably is just this formal germ of the moduli space of Clavier's. And they have this argument that the partition function of this theory should be the B-model partition function. This is in their paper in 1994. And what Witten realized later is that they have this kind of funny holomorphic anomaly equation. Witten realized that you should interpret the holomorphic anomaly equation as saying that what's really going on is partition function is a state in the Fock space for H3. The holomorphic anomaly equation tells you, in Witten's interpretation, if I change the complex structure on X, I get a flat connection on H3, therefore an induced flat connection in the Fock space. The holomorphic anomaly equation just says it's a flat section.
Factor of two discrepancy between Witten's paper and BCOB and O and O equation. Is that ever resolved?
Where did that come up?
I remember at the end of his paper he sort of hems and haws about the discrepancy between his version and their version.
Ooh.
I don't know. I haven't looked at this paper in a while.
I mean, in the approach CNR are using, it's, which, I mean, maybe the discrepancy is like how precisely is our version of the UCB theory in relation to the original one. I think it. Maybe we'll see.
So I'm going to do the same thing for this large interdimensional guy.
I think this will help us see whether this is their problem. Feel free.
Some discrepancy in the holomorphic anomaly equation, which wasn't just the convention or
something. It's partition function. Sometimes you take a square of partition function, a partial square of partition function, compared to things like
still, also the genus 0 and genus 1 weren't quite taken into account. These various
qualities
which we'll revisit it later.
And there's certain, right, there's certain help.
I think we'll have a much better approach.
Well, since you were quoting this paper, presumably using something.
Yeah, no, I read it first. This paper is long in gestation, so I read this paper 7 or 8 years ago. I don't remember.
Which paper?
With this paper, I haven't read it for many days.
Which was called Quantum Background and Advanced Strength Theory. Mm-hmm.
So, how long have you been to time, by the way?
It took us 1 hour.
Okay, that's good. That's good, that's good, that's good. Okay, so we're going to construct a field theory where quantizing this field theory will produce for us a state in the Fock space. So the fields are going to be, you know, one half of our interdimensional symmetric vector space. Okay, the reason being, this will be good because functions in the fields will then be like the Fock space. So you notice something subtle, our symmetric vector space is not cotangent modulo. It's a cotangent as complexes. It's a cotangent modulus weighted vector spaces. Maybe I should write down something.
So PD is a cohomology or is it all polyvector?
All polyvector fields. It's a cotangent complex, so it's oh, thanks. So there's the positive part, assuming there's a negative part.
Is there some huge freedom in the choice of these Lagrangian in the net space? So it should only be like well defined on the cohomology.
The point is that being a Lagrangian can only be preserved by the differential is a really strong condition. We're going to see it translates into some master equation. And if you want it to be local, it's unique.
The information which you want to extract from this is contained in the function, in set of functions of prime number variables.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so maybe there's some kind of ontological stuff you have to say. I mean, if you view this Lagrangian as being a generating function,
that the generating function for you would be an interdimensional object.
Yes, but then
function.
But then there's some ambiguity. You know, it's like some solution to the master equation. It's going to be there's some equivalences. This generating function might be equivalent to some slightly different one by some BV equivalent.
The generating function for the Lagrangian is something like the covariance
transaction. It is exactly yes. Yes. That's. I can work on the general function on this page. So it's this one. Yeah. Actually, there's something on the last page I finished that. See, this cochain complex is not a direct sum of cochain complexes in the positive and negative part, because the differential involves this T delta, which moves you from negative to positive. That will play a role in it. Okay, so if you calculate what this generating function is, it's just the most natural thing you could do for sticking in VCV3 of a descendants. And if you turn off the descendants, it's the original VCV action, the cubic part of the original VCV action. And what you see is a little funny is that what we want to think of this generating function as the action function for PFT, but you know, there's no quadratic part. So this is a bit strange. But that's okay. So now the quadratic part is encoded in the differential on this. The linear differential is Cauchy complex. So from the point of view of the BV formalism, you know, the BV formalism, you want some infinite-dimensional symplectic vector space of fields. This is a case where it's Poisson, but you can still apply the usual machinery to try and understand quantization. So, there's a propagator, everything is fine. The propagator is the same one we see on the used. Okay. So this is a nice relationship between the BV formalism and the geometry in symplectic vector spaces, which is following.
What do you mean again? Is cotangent is a graded vector space, but not as a chain complex?
Well, so there's a differential which, when it's a graded vector space, splits up into positive powers of t and negative powers of t. Both of these are Lagrangians, but there's just that there's a differential which moves you from negative to positive. That's part of the differential.
You talk about cotangent. What does it have to do with the differential? It's something about the range of the vector space.
I just mean that this polarization is not respected by the differential.
I see.
So that there'll be some. Well, when we consider the Fock space will have a different. Will it have a differential, which is a quantization of the differential in the symplectic vector space? And because the polarization is not preserved, there will be some extra terms in the differential of the Fock space.
It's just
yeah, exactly.
And what about the A model?
On the A model, the A model does work. So, in the A model, on so degeneration of Hodge Durand says that I take this operator delta and make it homotopic to zero. So if I choose a way of this operator delta is like the circle action in Hodge homology. So if I choose a way of trivializing it, then I get a polarization respected by the differential. And in the A model, that's the analogous thing is the circle action in Furcal homology, which is just trivial. So then it actually splits up. I do the model in the compact symplectic manifold.
The differential is zero.
This part of the differential is zero. Like it's homotopic is zero. Okay, so as I was mentioning, there's some nice relationship between Lagrangian submanifolds here and the BV formalism for functions on this positive part. Right, and if I have a function on this positive part, I can take its graph, and that's some Lagrangian submanifold. And this graph being preserved by the differential, well, because the differential here does not respect the polarization, it's going to be some funny condition if you work it out. That the graph being preserved by the differential is precisely the classical master equation for this functional.
And the Q here?
Oh,
cube. This is a subcomplex, so I just need the determined differential on all subcomplex.
But you said it does not preserve. Oh, it preserves. It preserves. That part is preserved.
That part, the other part is not.
So we have these two interpretations of this classical action functional. This F0, which was the generating function for our Bollinger code. Well, we can think of it as a classical action functional, think of it as a code. And then the top, in each interpretation, the classical master equation is a nice meaning. In one of them, it's a consistency condition for some classical gauge theory. And the other is either a Bollinger semantic or is preserved for the differential. Okay, so our aim then is going to be to do something similar for the quantum theory, to say, let's try and quantize this guy with some solution of the quantum master equation. Then that will have an analogous interpretation as saying we have a state in the Fock space. So maybe I can answer these questions while I would bother doing this. Well, the answer is I worked quite hard on foundations of normalization and I wanted a good example. That turns out this. Okay, so we're going to use these techniques or work on to try and quantize this theory and see why you can. So let's say what it means. So the most naive idea is, we have this classical action functional. Let's try to add onto it power series in H bar, quantum corrections, which satisfies something called the quantum master equation. And again, this will have two interpretations. Firstly, it's some consistency condition of quantum gauge theory. So this means, this consistency condition means basically that your quantum measure is preserved by the gauge action or something. That's how it should be interpreted. And also as a symplectic interpretation, if that I look at the exponential of f over h bar, and I think of this being a vector in a Fock space, I can interpret this as the Fock space for this symplectic vector space, then it's preserved by the differential. However, we run into the problem. I mean, there's a reason quantum field theory is hard. That reason is these ultraviolet divergences. And here, that manifests itself as this operator is not defined. It involves multiplication of two distributions. So, okay, I think some general approach for making sense of the quantum master equation. That has to give some general definition of the PFT. So the idea is not to look for the actual scale zero effect of action functional F, because so now who knows what's going on at very, very small scales. But instead we look for a family of effective actions for every L greater than zero. And these must be related by orderly flow, as you'd expect. Intuitively, this means that if I integrate out modes of wavelength between epsilon and L, then I go from F epsilon to F of L. And at each scale, I ask that these satisfy some effective version of the quantum master equation, which now does make perfect sense. So this allows you to resolve the problem saying what the quantum master equation is.
When you talk about scales L, do you introduce at some stage an actual metric on the Calabi-L?
Yes, but it's, you need to gauge fix to talk about this, to introduce a propagator. So you need to choose a metric to do that, but in the end, what you get is independent of that by usual homological formalism in the story.
When you talk about scales, they're sort of relative to that metric.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But it kind of
I mean, you just need to multiply a little bit. It kind of doesn't really matter which one.
What's L in here? It's a number or a...
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's a number between 0 and infinity. And it's how much... You know, when L is 0, we're looking at everything is local points. When L is positive, we kind of spread out a little bit.
You really want to be a number, not a formal variable.
It's an actual number, yeah. So this definition of a UFT is, and I have some construction of these guys by obstruction theory. So term by term in HBAR, you can ask to construct one of these guys.
And this independence of the metric is no anomalies?
Okay, so the...
I mean, I'm thinking about one loop in particular.
That's a good...
There's a paper by Preston and Witten, which discusses the metric of the one loop.
Oh, yes, that's right.
And this has been studied also by Chi-Kun Lu and...
I haven't said that I constructed the quantum theory in three dimensions. So...
But you say it's independent of the metric. You actually expect that, or...?
Well, so what happens is this. So this, for every... So this notion of quantization seems to depend on metric, right? But it turns out that for any two metrics, the space of quantizations is canonically identified. So if you choose you may choose one metric and then quantize there. If I choose a different metric, I'm going to be able to find some quantization which matches yours. It just a quantization, but the issue is that a quantization which looks natural in one metric may look funny in another one. Right, I may have to add on some extra counter terms or something like that. So, okay. So what's
the... Is there a requirement that the metric is mainly consistent with the complex structure?
You want D bar star square 0? I'm really bad at this. I think you could tailor a certain solution for that.
Then at least it depends on half of the thing. What we expect from the target space theory from the defines the common structure is independent.
Yeah, but with this, I mean, the space of Taylor metrics is contractible, and this is some kind of, as you move your metric, you get homotopies. I mean, so if there was a unique quantization, which is the dream, then everything is completely independent of the metric. But if there are choices to be made,
so there's something outlined divergence. So these arguments that it's independent of the metric are based on visual.
Yeah, but I mean, there are other divergences, but that doesn't mean...
You say they may be divergences, or you know that there are, so it's actually
undefined. So, let's see, what happens? So my collaborator in this C. Lee, somebody told me in my name was that if you use the Yao metric on the Calgary threefold, it should be finite. And he worked very hard to try to prove this, and it's false. Okay, so there are multiple differences. But if you can show that the relevant cohomology groups vanish and there's a unique quantization, then there's essentially a unique way to add counterterms to fix that. That's actually, in dimension one, there it turns out to be finite, but you still need counterterms to solve a master equation. I mean, we haven't really gone that far in our dimensions, but I'd expect a low big number would be able to do something. I'll have to think about your point.
Is there some notion of unitarity?
I don't understand unitarity. Yeah, I have no idea. Nikita, are they kind of...
I don't think there's any notion of unitarity. So, homomorphic theory is insane.
I mean, ultimately, in a normal quantum theory, the whole point of quantization is... Yeah,
but
we care about quantization,
which care about is unitary. I mean, this theory is supposed to be similar to transcendence theory, so it's, in a sense, it's unitary because Hamiltonian is zero.
Yeah.
Mm. get. So it's like.
Subsets we can talk about very briefly also. The gender is the color.
Isn't it very weird theory? Interdimensional space of fields, degenerate quadratic part. I don't even know what the Hilbert space is.
Well, it's degenerate because of the gauge variance or for some other reason? Or just because of the way you look at it. Because if you write the BC, I mean, the Kadari Spencer or Granger, it doesn't look that degenerate.
Right, but the original thing that they did was like they took their fields to be the kernel of delta, right? And there was something non-degenerate. But this is not a very good thing to do either, because that sheaf is higher cohomology, which you really should include. So the purpose of this is to include the higher cohomology that sheaf. Some version of that. Okay, so also, term by term in HBAR, we can try to construct quantizations. And quantizations, if they're equivalents, there's some obstruction deformation problem. So the way it's going to work is that at each loop number, G, there's going to be some cohomology groups. H1 will be obstructions. You know, if H1 vanishes, then you can construct a quantization to that guy. H0 will be deformations. And this will be the possible things you can add on at that genus. And this will lead to, so if it's not a unique quantization, of course, it's difficult to pin down which one is the right one to use. So what CNI showed is the AD case is that on an elliptic curve, there is a unique quantization. And so far, it's not so satisfactory in higher dimensions. We're working on it, but we don't really have the results. Okay. So let's now. Well, suppose we have such a quantization, then, as I mentioned, like we can interpret the quantum master equation as something about the Fock space, saying that this expression, e to the f of h bar, is a closed element that defines a cohomology class in the Fock space. And the orgy flow tells you this independent of L, so we have this nice cohomology class in the Fock space, which we think of as the partition. So the theorem is that for the empty curve, this will match the game. So the set of rotation is then matching. Okay, so we have a family of empty curves, the usual one, that one's in the upper half plane. In the A model, we have symplectic vector space, which is just the ordinary cohomology. In the B model, the cohomology of our symplectic vector space is cohomology polyvector fields. We can identify these. There's some very natural way to identify these just by, dz translates to dz over here becomes d by dz over here. Dz bar over here becomes dv bar over here. It's a very simple thing. And as I said, in the A model, you construct this state in the block space from the Grom invariants descendants. And what my collaborator CV shows is that once you make this natural identification, the A and B model partition functions the same. Where, as usual, the Q in the A model counts the degree of your map, and the B model is the modulus of your elliptic curve. You said an hour or 50 minutes?
1 hour.
Okay, so maybe I will...
Which means you have less than But, okay, you can always go 5 minutes.
So. No. I'm at the end. I just wonder, should I stop here?
Oh, you think that you stopped too early?
Oh, no. I have a little more, but I was wondering, should I stop now? Or...
No, don't stop now. We're just getting it.
So you compute this... partition function including descendants and so on, and you just chose it.
You can compute it.
So how does it differ from the digraph and essentially stuff?
It's certainly related, right? And if you throw away the descendants, it turns out to be that same calculation digraph did. But it's
it's more complicated, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's much more complicated.
Digraph didn't far as I remember, that graph had the station receptor of the theory, so it had the centers of the theory class. He didn't have the descendants of the function.
I don't think he had descendants of the Gator class, for instance. Well, probably. I mean,
they map to the, so he has a representation in terms of the, on the mirror side, you get this,
That's right. So with the spot, I mean, like on the mirror side, we read this paper pretty carefully and see if this is very well. Like there's something kind of subtle going on that goes on from correspondence.
But he was using bosonic language, right? So later, I think
we're using bosonic language.
Bosonic language, but Depandero used phonetic language for his actual
signature. Yeah.
It's when you include the descendants of the function where it gets
a so what we did is we showed that there are several constraints. And that goes with zeros. Okay. So let's if you choose a polarization of this guy, then you can translate this state in box space into some correlators. It's an individual way. And you can show this works, this homomorphic anomaly equation. So the correlators of course depend homomorphically on the elliptic curve, but also homomorphically on the choice of spinning and the Hodge filtration. And they're modular on the two variables. So naively, of course, I can just take a complex conjugate spinning, but as we said, that doesn't depend homomorphically on the elliptic curve. This needs to be so-called homomorphic anomaly equation. So what we're going to do is to match up the A model is take that complex conjugate splitting of the Hodge. If I fix my elliptic curve with modulus tau, I take the complex conjugate splitting with modulus sigma on the same elliptic curve and then send sigma to infinity. This is where we see these things that Schreiber, which is crazy. Fix tau, let tau bond to infinity.
But it's B model, it's not excuse me.
B model. So if we choose the splitting, kind of the limiting splitting.
Oh, but that was it, there's a parameter of elliptic curve. It's a parameter of elliptic curve. It's a killer one.
Which is something equals A1 correlators. And also, the modularity becomes that when you take this sigma to infinity, everything becomes a quasi modular form. Right? Yeah, because there's the E2 is involved. Okay. So how do we do this? So I need to address your question with the sentence. The first thing we do is, when it comes to
Pande prove the analogous thing of the A model, they need to first produce the group of historical constraints,
which we do as well. And this allows us to get removed descendants of the class of one. How do we do this? They hold classically, and because there's unique quantization, if they didn't hold at the quantum level, we would get some deformation of the quantum theory. But it's unique, so therefore they hold. So this reduces to the stationary sector. He said he completed this already, but I look up his paper again. Where if I take omega to be the class of dz, dz bar up to some normalization, we compute these correlators. And here's. And this point is actually, I think, really not nice. I don't get a chance to explain. I can say it's really nice because I didn't come up. So if you figure out what do these become in the limiting splitting of the Hodge filtration, here they're in H1 ETE, but to identify them with something in polyvector fields, I need to, in our symmetric vector space, I need to choose a splitting But in limiting splitting of the Hodge filtration, this class omega just becomes something which has support on an A cycle. Okay, so now I can.
Formula sure of explicitly presented it. Does it seem to support the sports standards? It seems to support the
You're a guess, but it's what am I saying? Let's identify polyvector fields with forms. So then H1E with TE becomes identified with H1E with O. And once I use the splitting of the Hodge filtration to put this back into complex cohomology, I look where it goes in the limit. And then in the limit, it becomes this A cycle. So then we can choose a representative. And if there's some kind of cohomology stuff, it doesn't matter which representative we choose in the same cohomology class through these computations. So we choose a representative with some kind of delta function.
There's a Poincaré dual, obviously.
Yes, exactly, yeah. But, well, depends what you call the A cycle. Poincaré dual of the A cycle is the B cycle, right? But.
Okay. Well, since you take it a limit, like tau bar goes to infinity, that probably assumes a choice.
Exactly, yeah.
Here's the elliptic curve of street.
Yes, yeah. Okay, so now we want to compute correlators of these things where we export an A cycle, but it can be any A cycle. So I choose one to be on one A cycle, another one to be on a parallel one. And then I get these guys. And this kind of immediately implies, I mean, if I write down the propagator of my theory, the propagator of my theory is the propagator of a free boson. So it immediately implies that the correlators are the correlators of some operators in the free boson. And because this guy doesn't depend on the order in which I put things, these operators commute. So it's a completely immutable system. And there aren't very many of those. So that's the answer. Yeah, the right-hand side is selected on the rotation, so these operators can leave.
In the current algebra, free bosons are not very different from this algebra. One just went by the currents, and then one just went by double generators.
So this is the double generators.
You're supposed to get double generators. I know, but...
Yeah, but, I mean, but you also you know what the classical limits are, right? I mean...
What are the classical limits?
The classical limits are just something like this.
You mean that's the field alpha?
Yeah.
So these are like KGB Hamiltonian. You mean the residue?
Yeah, the residue. Yeah.
So these are like KGB Hamiltonian.
No, it's not.
Not KGB.
I mean, they would be KGB Hamiltonian.
They would be
equal to some kind of Fourier transform. This is like actually W. Alpha is a current?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. You mean the Cartesian kind of double unit?
Okay. So it's diagonal some algebra double unit.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's supposed to be taken the components of the current,
There are also KGB Hamiltonians, which are kind of symbols which are leading, which are quadratic or squares of this kind of alpha. Because it's tensor, stress tensor square, which is like alpha. You talk about that, but you need double infinity. Double infinity inside the question.
Perhaps.
Yeah, I'm not the expert in spending.
There's a way to make some light transformation which would make the double generators into usual currents. Which current? Usual subtle.
It's for your transport.
KP top.
We're still discussing the elliptic curve,
Elliptic curve, yeah. Yeah. But when you apply these boson from correspondence, these become the really simple operators from the inside, which can be and the
just the
Italian. Yeah, exactly. And
that's just
yeah.
Thank you.
And these are what a good could come. And they're probably used in our paper, it's the same formula, except with the commuting operators and the free boson.
They use the what?
When they do the in-world computation, they know in terms of these coincidences.
And model of the elliptical. They actually did for all curves, I suppose.
They did for all curves.
But in particular for the curve.
But they appear to defend these nice formula.
You get exactly the same.
Exactly the same. We agree. The boson is
actually. Okay,
cool.
So that's a verification.
Yeah.
And then it works. Yes. Question? It's actually, if possible, to solve your answer constraints. I when you said that you get this, I really thought you get an efficient solution to function of all your measured concerns.
I mean, like, it's actually right. Just...
I don't know. I mean, a Kunkel is much better than meeting this, obviously. Like, if in their paper they didn't write down a closed formula.
I saw this. I saw this other things.
So you wrote down a closed formula?
Yes.
Well, then they must be the same because there's no concerns.
Yeah,
they determined everything.
That would be really fine.
Yeah.
Any other questions? So this calculation is in the limit when tau bar goes to infinity, or?
Yes, because the AMO was only defined in that limit.
Okay, and so what, can we go back to the previous slide? You have to recap. Right. So these are the only classes that you have, because it's only going to rank, and then you have the descendants. Right. And then you're saying that there's only one choice of this. That there are sort of constraints together with what? With something else.
With the fact that you can write it as the expectation value of these operators.
But how do you know that again?
So
we did this thing where in some limit, these omegas can be written as delta functions in these A cycles. And then you explicitly look at the Feynman diagram expansion of what this is, and that the propagator is like the Weierstrass P function. So it's a mix. I mean, this is you see a formula physicists would write for the expectation values of operators.
That's what you mean by localization.
Yeah,
it becomes supportive of the main cycle, and that implies that it is a trace.
Yes.
How does it imply?
You have something on the circle.
Yes.
And that's the way our fields are set up. You have this field of all these polyfact fields of powers of T, but the propagator only sees, kind of doesn't see any powers of T. So as far as the propagator is concerned, it's some kind of free boson with some extra stuff. So what we have in the circle is a function in the space of fields, so it's an operator. And then it's connected by some propagators. That's...
Yes. How do you know the propagator?
Oh, we can calculate it. It's the Weierstrass P function.
I know, but why he gets the first one of this purpose to say exactly this component.
Too much
notion of comparison instructions. Yeah, that's in Dyckhoff's paper, the propagators.
Kadarius tensor field comes with free boson.
So this Kadarius tensor theory is so nuts that I don't have much intuition. So usually, in most of the quantum field theories that we understand, if you try to write the theory in higher and higher dimensions, it becomes sort of more and more non-normalizable.
Mm-hmm.
Is that also true of this one?
It seems to be. It's non-normalizable even in dimension one because. If you, in the B model, you're supposed to have this kind of thing about scaling the following form of H bar, right? So if you look at what that means, it means that the term with the H bar to the G is allowed to have G derivatives in it. So the further you go out, the more derivatives you can potentially have.
Okay, so from what you said before, it's harder to do this in higher dimensions, but I gather you're saying that's not because of just naive power counting or normalizability or something like that.
Yeah, so that also, So now constructing the quantization is essentially the same problem as constructing these commuting operators here. And that's a really, really strong constraint. And so the commutativity of the operators gets translated into some master equation. And it's like really hard to solve that equation. So here we can really show that there's a unique solution in dimension two, you know, dimension three, you just have to compute these cohomology groups to see whether there is or not. Nothing satisfactory. I wasn't so worried with the 3K3s just because the ML was also exciting, but maybe I should try again.
What about local Calabria 3.4?
I think the problem for local Calabria 3.4.
And can you connect to this matrix model? Recursion formulas? Modeling the B models?
I would love to, yeah. And like Andy and David and I were talking about this all week, but
there's one thing, so actually you didn't explain my question. There's one phenomenon in the A model is that from a Walsh point of view, if you have a collision with something in the funnel inside, you can actually extract a piece of normal theory which concerns only this funnel.
Mm-hmm.
Those are normal bundle, but it doesn't care about the rest of the collision. So there is notion of localization, which if you translate it to the language of target space theory, whatever it will mean on the near side,
that's something strange. There's normally quantum field localized on something. Mm-hmm. I agree. I mean, you might expect something similar like this to happen in parallel. I imagine that you're only going to use some kind of, if you do something similar with field dimensions, you might expect. If you take insertions which are in classes in H3, you could localize them all to Lagrangians. And you get, if you have a torus vibration, you might get some kind of control over what's going on. It's some higher dimensional version of the different system.
I thought people had a picture that if you take it, the analog of Kalman and things like the loop where your Calabria will collapse to any real dimensional.
Yes, exactly.
Something with some knot inside which presents a similar vibration. Then you expect to get some kind of transcendence theory on that three real dimension.
On the face?
Yes. With the gauge group, which would be like this quantum preserving, if you're more from the sort of influence, and then this complicated knot would be this.
Interesting. Yeah. I see, because it's right. It's where the field has kind of singularities. It's,
also because on the A model side, when you just look at the generation of the model curves, they will become graphs. The fact that you get to the dimension 2 is very presentation of the theory. It's very dimension 2, not dimension 1.
And with
any other questions? Let's continue.